Today's daf, Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Vav, and we're holding it at Tana Rabbanan. We're getting back to the idea of how exactly we define the Tchumim after defining the extensions of the city. So, you're coming now to be Merabeah, the city. Bala Rabbah, Merabeah beribua olam. Why do we use this language, Bala Rabbah? Because, as we said, the only time that this idea of sticking to the due northeast, southwest is true, is where we have to artificially be merabe in the city. That's what it says, ba l'rabah. But if the city itself was naturally, had developed as a square, so remember, we already learned that then there's no halacha of being merabeah it according to the directions that are objective on the planet, we just take its natural shape. So when you're coming to create a square city, then you have to be merabeah biribua olam. So in other words, the northern boundary goes along north in on the globe. Dorom is on the globe. The way to tell, assuming that you don't have any clear-cut reference to north, east, southwest, you don't have a compass, whatever, so then you can orient yourself by the constellations, if you want, because the Taurus will always be further to the north than the other constellations. Obviously, it's not literally north, but it's easy to spot the northern direction if you take a look at Taurus, and it's easy to spot the southern direction if you take a look at Scorpio, but that means you have to take a look at the very last star in the tail of Scorpio, which is more south. Again, it's just more south and more north. Obviously, the constellations are not north and south. Okay, says Rabbi Yossi, if you don't know how to deal with putting it against the constellations, there's a very simple way of figuring out north, south, east, and west. And that would be, Imeni Yodei L'Rabba B'Ribua Shel Olam, so then B'Rabba K'min HaTkufa. Basically, what you should do is, you should draw your lines according to the seasons. So in other words, you take a look at the equinox, you take a look at the solstice, and you measure where sunrise and sunset occurs at the equinox or at the solstice. It's easy for you to determine the equinox or the solstice because obviously you'll have a choice between the longest day of the year and the shortest day of the year. So as long as you keep your clock more or less okay, you will know which day is the equinox and which day is the solstice. So then the thing to do is on that day, Let me just point out to you how this works and why it works this way. Otherwise the sugya is going to be a little bit confusing, right? And basically, if you're located a third of the way up on the northern hemisphere, as we are here in Yerushalayim, so let's just assume, being as we don't have our South Africans today because it's Yom Tov Sheni, so I can be a little bit prejudiced here. But we're talking from the point of view of Yerushalayim, so we'll make it very simple. Okay, so Yerushalayim's about a third of the way up the northern hemisphere above the equinox. And that way, obviously, you're never going to have a situation where the sun is actually in the north. The sun is always going to be towards the south. The only question is how much towards the south. Because remember, the earth is only inclined at about 23 degrees to the sun, which is what makes the differences between these days, right? Again, imagine for yourself, the planet remains tilted in exactly the same tilt, no matter where it is along the orbit, its orbit around the sun. So because of that, as you get to the part of the orbit where the top of the earth is facing away from the sun, so then imagine when you're looking at the sun, it's going to be further towards the south. The rays of the sun are going to be spread out far more over the north than they are on the south. So it's going to be winter in the north because you have much less energy coming in per square meter because of the tilt, and it's all, everything is just sort of, you're spreading out the same air, the same amount of energy over a much wider area. Then when the earth has gotten around to the other side of its orbit, that part that was facing away from the sun is now facing towards the sun. And because of that, the sun is now, you have much more energy per square meter. But the thing is that since that tilt is only 23 degrees, so you're still never going to actually see the sun going to your north, right? It's like it's always going to be a little bit to the south. The only question is how much to the south. Okay, so what we're going to try to do over here is get a north and south border by simply taking the following idea. Take the longest day of the year, right? And then take a look where the sun rises on the longest day of the year, and then take a look where the sun sets on the longest day of the year. So then that would be the place where the sun is furthest to your north, right? It's never going to be due north, obviously. So how can you possibly make it due north? Very simple. Draw a line from sunrise to sunset across the horizon as you see it. And then if you have that line, so then you know if you face the middle of that line, then you're going to be facing due north. Do the same thing at the solstice, which is going to therefore give you the shortest day of the year. So over there, the sun's going to set all the way to the south, and it's going to rise all the way from the south, and then it appears to go up and comes back again down towards the south. Draw a straight line, and that way you're looking at the south. So that's great. So then if you take those two points, you've got yourself north and south. Okay. Then what you can do is you can look at the equinox. If you look at the equinox, you're going to have the Chama being Yotze Bechatzi Mizrach. So this would be the Nisan, what we call the Nisan equinox and the Tishrei equinox. So then the Chama is going to rise in the middle. So then it's going to look to you to be east, and then it's going to set in the middle, looking to you as it's west. Draw that line, and that's going to be, we're going to see that this is not really accurate, but we'll pretend that it goes directly to the east, directly to the west, and it's going to sink directly at the four corners. So therefore, you know now where to put the west side of the city, and you know now where to put the east side of the city. And that's the remez that we had in the pasuk that we read yesterday. Olech el darom, sovev el tzafon. Olech el darom means during the day. That means that the sun is going to be in the southern part of the sky. Obviously, the only way it's going to get around the earth, as far as you're concerned, to come back in the morning at the other end is by going around the northern side. So it's always going to be towards the south in the northern hemisphere. And the way in which it gets back to the south in the morning is because it's going around the back of the planet so that it's to your north. You just don't see it because it's blocked by the planet itself. And then comes around again as you revolve, comes around towards the south again. So it's Sovev el Tzafon Balayla, and then it's Olech el Darom in the morning. So this is what it looks like to someone who is living in the northern hemisphere. Sovev, Sovev, Olech el Ruach. So what this means is not the Ruach according to the way the Gemara is darshaning it, but Sovev ha Ruach means the direction of the horizon. Doesn't mean the winds. So Sovev, Sovev, Olech el Ruach. So then the directions of the east and the west, Elu Pnei Mizrach, Pnei Ma'arav. So sometimes the sun is going to go over them by day, and sometimes it's going to be going over them at night. Because if you have a very long day in the summer, so then that means you're near the solstice, you're the summer solstice, so then the sun is going to rise and set as far to the north as it can possibly get for you from where you are. So then that means during the day, you see the sun crossing until it finally gets back. It's going to cross the west and the east during the day. But around the winter, it actually, all of that is movement is basically in the night. So the movement to the north incorporates the movement around the western side, and then in the early morning incorporates the movement to the eastern side, which is why it comes up so late. Okay, this is a little bit of an approximation, obviously, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. Now, let's talk about something else. The fact is that the length of the solar year is, in modern terms, highly variable. It's highly variable means, you know, there could be seconds of differences, actually could be minutes of differences between one year and the next. And that's because there are many, many factors that actually affect the solar year besides the simple way that people used to look at it. So, I mean, what we've got is even the differences of the polar ice that is starting to melt is changing the amount of minutes that you have in a year. and you've got a constant slowing of the rotation of the Earth because of tidal forces anyway with the moon. And depending on the amount of water that you've got or the glaciers that you've got and the distribution of the mass of the Earth plus the tugging of the Earth from other planets, which is constantly changing, obviously it is extremely complex to calculate. So every single year is slightly different in length. But we can try to approximate that length. And approximation at the time of the Gemara is different than approximation today, but approximation at the time of the Gemara, and this became part of the, as you know, of the Gregorian calendar, it became the 365 and a quarter days, and then they add in this leap year every 4 years or so to try to make it even. But in any event, that was a very gross approximation. That approximation is easy to calculate. So because of that, we use that for most dinim, including the tkufa, which would define when we say ten talamot and stuff like that, right? Because it's not really very, very nogea to be 100% accurate. And we call that the tkufa of Shmuel. That tkufa of Shmuel, that became, as I pointed out to you when we last had a Birkas Hachama, that became an easy way to calculate the way that things are in relation to the original Maaseh Bereishis and the placement of the sun and the planets and so on. But it's all fiction because it's totally off in terms of reality. But the same kind of fiction that the Molad of the Levana is. The Levana is never a new moon at the Molad. I mean, it's a, but again, to keep things simple, we pretend, and as the Chazon Ish says, look, the Torah was given essentially for a primitive human without instruments. You're supposed to, therefore, be able to calculate these things very easily as if you were a simple non-scientific human. And because of that, we do the same thing with the math, as we saw. The Torah may be meramis to us, the actual value of pi, but we play around with pi as if it's 3, which makes it very, very easy for us to calculate the different dinim. The same thing is true for the square root of 2. The same thing is true for what we call a square for our tefillin, which, I mean, if we're really machmir, then obviously nobody's tefillin are actually square if we're going to take molecular measurements. So again, what is the klal? The klal is the state of technological development at the time of Har Sinai. This is true not only in terms of physics, it's true in terms of biology, it's true in terms of botany. As the Gemara says, if you want to identify a species, the species is defined as it would have been defined at the time of Har Sinai, where there was not enough of this differentiation to recognize one subspecies from another subspecies, and therefore the entire thing is considered to be part of that species, even though nowadays it's recognized as a different species. Again, as the Chazon Ish points out, the same thing is true in terms of the dinim of Treifas. We're not interested in things that you could do when it comes to a modern technology of changing things for medicine. It's only the treifas that the Torah gave us, as it's defined in the Alpayim Torah, which is the period of pre-technological proficiency. Okay, so because of that, we're going to also take the idea of the 365 and a quarter days, again, a fiction, which is called the Tkuf of Shmuel. We actually have a better approximation than that lahalacha, which we use for other things, which is the tkufa of Ravada. The tkufa of Ravada works out to 365 days, 5 hours, 55 minutes, 25 and a little bit less than a quarter seconds, because he uses halakim, so it turns out to 25.44 seconds. Again, that sounds very accurate, but it's really not accurate because of the variations in the year. And nowadays, it's really way off because now it's closer to 48, 49 minutes. So, but in any event, to keep things easy, so we'll take the 365 days and 6 hours. Now, let's divide that into 4 for our 4 seasons. Basically, what we do is we split up the orbit of the Earth at the 4 parts because that's pretty much the way that the energy of the sun is going to be distributed differently in winter and summer. And we've got those mid-seasons that we create. So if we divide the orbit of the sun, the orbit of the Earth around the sun into 4, and we divide 365 with 6 hours into 4, we end up with 91 days and 7.5 hours, right? Let's ignore the 6 and the 365 days divided is going to give us the 13 weeks, essentially. And then we've got that little bit extra for the quarter of the day. And then we've got that one additional day, which allows us basically would be 6 hours in order to get one day. And now, because of the extra 6 hours, we've got to add another hour and a half, right? So the hour and a half times four for each one of the seasons is going to equal those 6 hours. So that means the one day that's extra for the 13 weeks is going to give us the first 6 hours times four is 24 hours. And the 6 hours divided by four is another hour and a half, would equal 7.5 hours. Is this clear to everybody? It's very simple. So if we just round it off into weeks, we've got 13 weeks every season. Unfortunately, that leaves us an additional day to make up, which doesn't fall into the week. So, okay, so we split up that extra day, one quarter of the day for each season. That's one quarter of a day is 6 hours. Then we've got the extra 6 hours. We split up the 6 hours into four seasons, which gives us an extra hour and a half. That means that each one of the seasons is 91 days and 7.5 hours. Very simple to do the calculations, right? Because again, you're primitive. You could do this in your head. You don't need your calculator and everything's clear. Now, so what that would mean is that every season is actually separated from the previous season by an even number of weeks, 13 weeks. And the change will be only in the next 7.5 hours. So that means that each one of the seasons are going to be separated from the next season by 7.5 hours. That's what it boils down to. Okay, so that's great. 7.5 hours means that if we start, as we're going to, Nisan, remember, so we say the Torah creates the sun on Yom Revi'i. So let's say at the beginning of Yom Revi'i, remember the way that we split up the clock is midnight is real midnight, and midday is real midday. It has nothing to do with the number of minutes and so on, right? So it would be the mid part of the day. That means that we start at 6 o'clock Jewish time, and that's the beginning of the day. Whenever that 6 o'clock boils down to on the clock, it might be 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it might be 8 o'clock at night. Whenever it is irrelevant to us. It's defined by the sun. It's not defined by anything else. So the moment that the day begins, now it's 6 o'clock. Halfway through the night, now it's 12 o'clock. Beginning of the morning, now it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So then if that's the case, let's imagine, as we're going to start with the Torah's giving the times of the creation, so that at the beginning of Yom Revi'i, the sun is now placed into the sky, so to speak, and that would be the beginning of that first Tkufas Nisan. Then that would mean the next season on is going to be exactly 13 weeks later, which we could ignore. And it'll be, in terms of what time in the day, 7.5 hours into the night, which gives us 1:30 in the morning. If the day started at 6, 6 hours later it's midnight, another hour and a half, it's 1:30 in the morning, Jewish time. Okay, the next season would start now in the daytime, because it would be 3 hours after sunrise, because it would be 7.5 hours after 1.5 hours in the day, meaning after 1:30 in the morning. And that gives us now 3 hours. I'm using an old computer here. Okay. And then the fourth season would be 10.5 hours into that day. And then when we come around again into the next season, we are now going to be at 6 hours after six in the beginning of the day, which is exactly midnight. So that would be the way it always works out, which means that Tkufas Nisan is always going to be on an even number. So if it started at 6, by the time you get around again with your 7.5 hours, it's still going to be on an even number, meaning now the next one is going to end up at midnight. And then the next one is going to be 6 o'clock in the morning, and the next one is 6 o'clock in the afternoon. So therefore, as Shmuel says, using the Tkufa of Shmuel, Tkufas Nisan is always going to be exactly at one of the quarter points. In other words, 6, 12, 6, 12. And either it's going to be at the beginning of the day, or it's going to be at the beginning of the night, or it's going to be in midnight, or it's going to be in midday. That we just worked that out, because as you take your 7.5 hours around four times, you're always going to find yourself at the beginning of a clear-cut six-hour period. Now, when it comes to Tammuz, which is the next, that's the summer solstice, so Ein Tkufat Tammuz Nofelet Ela O B'Achat U'Mechza O B'Sheva U'Mechza. It's either going to be at 1:30, meaning 1:30 in the morning, as we just made the calculation. It's very simple. If you started at 6 in the day, so then 7.5 hours is later, is 1.5 hours after midnight, which is 1:30 in the morning. Or if Kufas Nisan came out at, instead of at 6, it came out at midnight, so then it would be 7:30 in the morning. And so on and so forth. So it's always going to be at either Ba'achas Mechza, it's either going to be 1:30 in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, 1:30 in the afternoon, 7:30 in the evening. Those are your choices. And that, whether in day or night, that's a different issue. As far as Tishrei, which is the next Kufa, which is the autumnal equinox. So then that, if you add 7.5 hours to that, it's always going to turn out to be 3 o'clock, either a.m. or afternoon, or 9 o'clock at night, or 9 o'clock in the evening. Again, with the very simple cheshbon of having 7.5 hours to what was 1:30 in the morning before. And then the winter solstice, which we call the Tkufas Teves, is going to be 7.5 hours after that. If you add 7.5 hours to that, it's either going to be 4:30 or 10:30. Bein Bayom, Bein Balayla. So again, it'd be 4:30 in the morning, 4:30 in the afternoon. And it's very simple. And that means bet bein tkufa le tkufa. The always, you're going to have 91 days, 7.5 hours. And that would mean that ein tkufa moshechet b'chaverta, ela chatzi sha'ah. Now, this business about moshechet b'chaverta, that's the thing that we've had many times before, which is the kalash tzamchan. The kalash tzamchan is the abbreviation of the various things that we where this comes from is not clear, but it was all over the earth, as I showed you, that is the basis of the name of the days. The name of the days in the calendar all across the earth. In English, they took some from the Norwegian, they took some from Latin, it's a mix in English. But in all of the various languages, it's a reference to the various gods that were gods of the planet, or not what we would call planet. What they called planet is according to the meaning of the original word planet in Greek, which meant the wanderers. So the wanderers included everything besides the fixed stars, right? So then that would mean that it would include the sun and the moon they would call wanderers, and then they would have the only planets that they could see, again, without a telescope, and you're supposed to be dealing only with the things that you could see without a telescope, as we explained. So then that would be Kochav. Kochav they called Mercury. It was very close to the sun. Then there would be the moon, so that's Chof. Lamed would be the Levana. Then would come Saturn, which is Shabtai, that's the basis of Saturday. Then would come Tzedek, which is Jupiter. Then would come Ma'adim, which is Mars. Those of you who speak Portuguese or Spanish recognize that Mercedes, that's Mars. Then comes Sun, that's Chama, that's Sunday in English. And then comes Noga, which is Venus, and that's Kalash Tzamchan. And in that order, we give 1 hour of the day, starting with the hashpa'ah of that particular wanderer, and so on. So since it's only 30 minutes difference between one season and the next, because it's 7.5 hours, so you're only going to be stealing, so to speak, the hanhaga of one of these wanderers by 30 minutes, not a whole hour. Shmuel also said that, yes, we have a Kabbalah that if a Tkufat Nisan falls out in the same hour that the wanderer that's in charge is actually Jupiter, so then you've got a problem, because if it's in Jupiter, then it's going to cause damage to the trees, and the same thing would be true. Ein lecha tkufas teves shenofelas b'tzedek, and if it's the teves, the winter solstice that falls out in Jupiter, it's going to be a disaster for the planting, because it's always going to be very dry. It's going to dry out the seeds. And this is only true, however, if it also works out that way, that the molad of the Levana falls out also, either during the time of Jupiter again, or during the time of the Lavana itself. Again, this is all just astrology, as far as we're concerned. Okay, so we have that very simple thing clear. Right, I think, is that concluded? Or did I skip something? I'm wondering, I think I skipped Rimsharsha in the middle, right? Yeah, I skipped Rimsharsha, I'm really sorry. Don't ask me how I did that. But Omer of Rimsharsha, going back, Rimsharsha is the one who clarifies that this oversimplistic way that we said, the Pasuk of Olech Eldorom, that's not really true, because that Braita was pretending that the sun actually can come out at the top in the north and go down to the south. In which case, the traversing of the horizon to the east and the west will be done at night. But that's nonsense. That's certainly not true. Less nolani klali, because like the Brisa says, the sun can't possibly, in the northern hemisphere, or at least in the populated northern hemisphere, it's never going to be going out mikerem mizrachit tzfonit v'shaka b'kerem maravit tzfonit. There's no such thing as the sun setting in the north. I don't care what period of the year it is. It can't come out in the corner of the northeast corner. It's further to the north. What is that, mamish in the north? And the same thing is true. It never goes all the way to the south. It's not going to come out of the Mizrahi Dromit. And it's not going to be setting in the southwest either, in the Maravi Dromit. So Mimela, to make it so simple and to pretend that the sun is going to take the sides, meaning the east and the west, completely at night during the winter, that's not true. Only some of it is going to be in the day. So since it doesn't rise and set at true northeast and northwest, so then that means that by definition, a lot of the horizon is also going to be crossed by the sun. And of course, if you look at the sun, it's not going in an arc directly from east to west. It is always traveling around and then coming back down again. And as it travels around, it looks to you like it's going up to the north, coming around, and then going around back south. And along in the morning, it's going along the east, and in the evening, it's going along the west as it's heading towards setting. Because obviously, if from your perspective, it can't possibly just pop out of the far corner to the north or pop out from the far corner to the south. So how could you say that weird shot in the Pasuk that the part of the Pasuk is referring to the east and the west, and that depends on the nighttime according to the season? It's not accurate, and people will get confused by it. Okay, anyway, getting back, sorry, we'll stick that in. And how come nobody yelled that I skipped it? Okay, anyway, Tana Rabbana. Now getting back to the Mishnah. So in this Mishnah, we end up with extending the Tchum tremendously, right? Because the first thing we did is we extended the city so that if the city was round, wow, we gave you a heck of a lot of extra space to be able to walk. And after doing that, we made again a ribua, which means that from the corner of the city that we defined, we're giving you an additional diagonal from that corner to the corner of a square that was made by the Tchum. And instead of 2,000 amas, that ends up being the diagonal of the 2,000 amas. So imagine to yourself, here's what you would do. If you are Merabea Ta'ir, so Mirabeat here was said is talking about where the city itself wasn't a ribua. Well, let's imagine we have a city that's literally a circle. Okay, so if it's a circle and we're taking pi as 3, so then when we add the diagonal, we're basically giving you an additional fourth, right? So we're Mirabeat here. So then what you want to do is you want to pretend that you've got this square that you're putting on top of the circle. After you put the square on top of the circle, you then are going to put a bigger square around the Tchum so that you extended the Tchum north, east, south, west by 2,000 amas. Okay? Imagine drawing the lines out. So now you've got the whole area and each corner is going to be missing from that diagram, right? You have a square city, 2,000 amas, let's imagine. And now that square city is extended north, east, southwest by 2,000 amas. What about the area that was left out that you weren't able to extend because it went to the side? Well, those are the diagonals. And what you do is you stick in another square in each one of those. So that means that the extra squares are going to be another 2,000 by 2,000 for the Trum at each corner, right? And that way you're going to get yourself a square. But that would mean that you get the diagonal from the edge of the city. So you take another square and you put and your chozer merabea et atchumim, and then that entire thing becomes like one vast square tabla. So what that means is, in practical terms, if you are counting the trum, do not count the trum of 2,000 amas at the sharp edge of the square. Because if you count 2,000 amas from the diagonal of the square going out, let's see, at the edge of the city. The city is shaped northeast, south, west as a square. You are at the northeast corner of that square. And you think that if you want to walk from that corner, you need to count 2,000 amas. Nonsense. Because if you count 2,000 amas from that corner, and then you draw a line from that place that you got to 2,000 amas from the other corner, how wide will that space be from the straight edge of the square? About 1,400 amas, not 2,000 amas. It would be 1,428 amas. Correct? Because you measured a diagonal of 2,000. You weren't supposed to measure a diagonal of 2,000. You were supposed to imagine a straight line of 2,000 coming out from the square city. That, of course, when it got to the diagonal, that would have given you an additional 800 amas. Why is that true? That's because of the 1.4 that we consider for the diagonal for purposes of the square root of 2. We make the square root of 2 1.4. If it's 1.4, then by Pythagorean theorem, we end up with every 1,000 amas gives us an additional 400 amas along the diagonal. Since we have 2,000 amas, we now have 800 additional amas along the diagonal, right? So now we've got ourselves an awful lot of extra walking over here. So Keshu Moded Lo Yimdod Mi Emtza Keren Alpayim Ama, do not measure at the sharp edge of the square, because then you'll be mafsid et hazaviyot, and you're going to be canceling out that additional area that was supposed to be given to the whole from all over the place, and you needed to have a square, and now you won't have a square. But instead, what you do is you bring a virtual tablet, which is 2,000 by 2,000 amas along each side, which of course means it's a heck of a lot longer than that in the diagonal, and then you put that on the Karen at the same place in the straight line with its diagonal. You now have that additional diagonal, and that would mean that you've got a tremendous amount of additional area. Because if we take the round city that we turned into a square, and we assume that we're talking about the 2,000 amas city, so that would mean that the city, by squaring the city, you added 400 amas at each point, because it was originally a circle. Now you're going to be turning it into a square, and a square, if pi is 3, is 1/4 more than the square, than the circle. So then that means the area that you gained were arba me'ot amot lekan, v'arba me'ot ama lekan. So each, assuming that we're talking about, to keep things easy, a circle, the city was a circle. It was exactly 2,000 amas. If we had left it that way, so then that would have meant that if you start in the city center, the radius would have been 1,000 amas in all directions, including what is now in the corner. But now you made it into a square. And if that's the case, we now made the distance from the middle of the city, which would previously have been 1,000 amas, no matter where you went, it is now 1,400 amas because of the additional square root of 2 that we added to you in the corner. Is this clear? So if you start in the center, instead of being able to walk only 1,000 amas, you are now able to walk, if you're aimed towards the edge of the square, which is the diagonal, and that would be an extension of your radius, you are now extending the radius by 1.4 to turn it into a square, because the radius was 3 as pi, given that we were using that as 3, and then we're going to use one additional unit, 4, to make the square. I still see strange looks of wonder on some people's faces. This really should be quite simple Even Barnea is happy. He's waving, apparently waving some schnapps to drink to the simplicity of this cheshbon. L'chaim, l'chaim, Barnea. Thank you, thank you. Yeah, Richie's got himself some
stronger than that.
Yeah, well, this is only vodka. Richie's got some talisker, I'm assuming, right there. Everything looks nice. Okay, so everyone is happy. If there's any questions, now's the time to ask, please. No? Silence? Okay, very good. Now, that is as far as the circle is concerned. Now let's move out to the tchum and figure out how much extra space you gain. There we go. Jack Daniels, not bad. So now if you're at, Richie goes for Jack Daniels in a pinch also. So now if you're at the edge of the tchum, okay, how much extra did you gain in the tchum? Now, the tchum, of course, was 2,000 amas, not 1,000 amas of a radius. And there, when you come to the tchum, nimtzu tchumi mistakrim, shmona meot amalekan, v'shmona meot amalekan. Because you started with 2,000 amot, you had to multiply the 2,000 amot by the square root of 2 to figure out where your diagonal is, and that gave us an additional 400 for each LF, so multiplied by 2, you've got 800. That means you've got 800 additional amos in the tchum if you're walking towards the corners on each side of the city. So this has got you an awful lot of extra space between the extension of the city and the extension of the tchumim together. Nimtzu ha'ir v'tchumim together are mistakrim elef umatayim lekan ve'elef umatayim lekan. So that means if we could put together your 800 from the tchum and your 400 from the extension of the radius in your circle into a square, we now have an additional 1,200 amas that is being given to you on every side or every diagonal of the city. If you started, therefore, from the center of the city, and now you're going to be able to walk, all the way to the edge with an additional 400 and then an additional 2,800, which is amazing. So you've got a lot of space to walk. Amrabaya, obviously, these figures work. We're taking these figures as a city that was originally 2,000 amos and it was round. I mean, that's how this all works out. Just keep things easy. So, Meshkachat Labimata Davitre Alfe Atre Alfe, and that's what we've been talking about. Now, in terms of the application, remember, where did we learn out this whole halacha from? From the dinim of the Orei Halavim. And in the Orei Halavim, we learned that there was two separate circuits. In one pasuk it says Elef Amas Aviv, and in one pasuk it says Alpayim. So the Gemara Darshan before, the Elef is Lemigrash, the Alpayim gives you an additional Elef for agriculture. Now, on the surface, if you're extremely unsophisticated, let's say second grade level, it sounds to you as if you've got the same amount of space for a Migrash that you do for agriculture. Obviously, that's not true, because if you're supposed to be big Mirabea the city. Sorry, who's talking? Daniel? Please mute yourself if you didn't mean to talk. So what you really have, of course, is much more than that, because since you're going to be Mirabea the city, then that means that all of that additional area is going to accrue to your agricultural lands. And it's going to be much larger than those original lands. So therefore, let's figure that out. If we take a look at the Braita says like this. Amar Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi, the tchum of the Orei Halavim. So the total amount of additional space that the Orei Halavim had was 2,000 amot. Okay, now the first 1,000 amot, that is meant to be park area. You are not allowed to do anything with that area. It can't be used for agriculture, can't be used for buildings of any kind, even public buildings. And this is part of the aesthetics of the city, is that it's meant to be surrounded by parkland, and it cannot be ruined by having things in the way. The eye has to see the beauty of the city in its entirety with the wall looming up in front of you, and that's just very impactful. So this is a din in terms of aesthetics that the Torah is mechayev. Now, the agricultural land is one additional 1,000 amas beyond that. So we have to subtract the parkland from the total, which means that if you work out the amounts, it turns out that the parkland will be 1/4 of the total area, and the rest will be for agricultural use, sadot, kramim, and so on. How do we know that? Omar Rava, because the Pasuk said, Bikira Yir V'chutza, Elef Ama Saviv, which is a steer to the Pasuk that said, Alpaim Ama. So as we explained there, it means Amrat Torah, Sabei Betair Be'elef, surround the city with 1,000 amas. Now, this word surround the city is going to be very important in the calculations that we're making now, because in reality, the parkland is not squared for obvious reasons. The whole point of the parkland is to be able to give the aesthetics of the city's shape, and therefore, in reality, the parkland is going to be if it's a circular city, the parklet is going to be circular, even though we're mirabea, the city, virtually, in terms of its tchum. And that's going to end up making a big difference to our calculations. But let's leave that for a moment and pretend that the elef amma are measured the same way the elef amma, which means that the area that's parkland will be 1/4. What? 1/4? Last I heard, 1,000 is half of 2,000. I mean, how do you get 1/4? What does that mean? Paul Gahav, I mean, it's certainly going to be half, isn't it? Now, everybody understands it's not really going to be half, because we need to add extra amounts for that larger piece that's sticking out. We're going to have a bigger piece. But, I mean, that would depend on the particular city, right? So forget about that, because that's sort of complicated. We have to analyze that set percentage, and it would actually depend on how the city is shaped. It's rectangular, and so on and so forth. Fine. So the Gemara, the main point the Rishonim say of the Gemara doesn't literally mean it's half. It's clear it's not half. It just means it can't possibly be a quarter. That's crazy. How did it get to be a quarter? Omar Rava. So Rava said, look, I talked this over with Barada. Barada was a professional surveyor, and he was a mishulcha. Remember, mishulcha means the guy who pulls on the ropes and measures things. So he was a professional, and I asked him, like, okay, how would the Braita work out in practical terms? If you want to give me an example of such a situation where it will turn out to be a quarter. So he said, look, it's easy to do if you calculate the area. I'll explain to you how you do it, okay? Let's talk about a city that is 2,000 amas, right? And it's 2,000 amas by 2,000 amas, which means that the tchum of the city are an additional 2,000 amas in all directions, right? Okay, so now if that's the case, that means that the area is a total of 6,000 amas by 6,000 amas, right? Let's figure out the area. How many square amot are there in 6,000 times 6,000? 36 million, okay? So we're talking about a total area of 36 million square amot. Is this clear? We multiply the entire distance, the 2,000 amas of the city, 2,000 amas on this side, 2,000 amas on that side, gave us a square of 6,000 by 6,000, multiply 6,000 times 6,000, and you get 36 million, right? Great. Okay, now, let's take the four areas of the tchum. Let's pretend that the four areas of the tchum extend out directly, right? So each tchum, forget about the corners, there are no corners, extend the northern side an additional 2,000 amas, right? And the southern side, 2,000 amas. And the same thing for the east side and the west side. Okay, so how large are the tchumim themselves? So they would be 16 million square amos, correct? Because since the city itself is 2,000 amos, so each tchum area is 2,000 by 2,000, the 2,000 along the city by 2,000 extending outwards, right? So each one of them is 2,000 by 2,000, and that means each tchum is 4 million, 2,000 times 2,000 is 4 million, and we've got four of these, one on the north, one on the south, one on the east, and one on the west, okay? So now we're starting with 16 million square amas. That means that the area around the city is actually 32 million square amas. Okay, now, if you have, I skipped the chronos. Okay, how did we get to there? Because we have the chronos. Okay, how big are the chronos? The chronos are what we're referring to, are the blank areas that you left out when you extended the tchum due east, due north, due south, due west, right? So now you left out the corners. The corners are 2,000 by 2,000 themselves, because in every direction, the city was extending outward 2,000 amas. So we've got every one of those corners is an additional 2,000 by 2,000, which gives us another 16 million, right? So the first one was 16 million, 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, and we added 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, 2,000 in the corner, and that is 16 million plus 16 million for a total of 32 million. Okay, we had 36 million in total, including the city. Now the tchumim themselves are 32 million. Now, if we take out the 8 million square amas, that's tamanya, 8 means 8 mega. So we've got over here 8 million square amas of tchumim that was actually supposed to be the migrash, because the migrash is only 1,000, and the migrash is 2,000 amas along each side. So it's 1 by 2,000. That gives us 8 million, and that can be deducted from this total. Plus, we've got 4 million because it's only 1,000 on the extensions, because it's 1,000 by 1,000 instead of 2,000 by 2,000. So it's another 4 million square amas that belong to the Migrash. So that means that the total area of the Migrash is 8 plus 4 is 12. Take out 12 million square amas from the total of the 36 million square amas. So that's not, you said it was a fourth. That's not, I mean, we're talking about out of the area of the extension, not out of the 36. So I don't get it. That 12 million square amas as compared to the 32 million square amas of the entire additional area of the Tchum is a third. Now, it's not a fourth, right? It's more. So how do you say Nimtza Migrash Revia? That 12 million square amos is more than a third of the 32 million. I don't get it. Well, hold on a minute. Hold on. Maybe it meant out of the total. So take the 4 million of the city itself, because the city itself was 2,000 by 2,000. That's 4 million. So add that. That means that if we take the total area, which we said is 36 million, and then you take the 12 million area of the Migrash compared to the entirety. Maybe that's what he meant, and it's a fourth. No, I don't know, unless you can't add. Last I heard, 12 million is exactly one-third of 36 million, but it's certainly not one-fourth, so I still don't get it. Where do you come out with one-fourth? No, oh, you know what? I know what we did wrong. You thought that we were talking about a square city, but we weren't talking about a square city. We were talking about a round city that you squared, okay? So then everything remains the same except for the parkland. Why? Because the parkland is shaped the way the city is shaped. So the parkland is exactly 1,000 amas around the city, and it does not gain those additional pieces in the corner, okay? So how much now do we have to take off? Well, again, if pi is 3 and the square is 4, so kama meruba yeter ala ego, it's 1/4. So now if we subtract 1/4 from the 12 million that we had come up with originally, I don't want to do the whole cheshbon, it's very simple. All you need to do is subtract 1/4 from the 12 million. If you subtract 1/4 from 12 million, you're left with 9 million. 9 million happens to be exactly 1/4 of the 36 million. Ha! So it works out perfectly. But we made a mistake in thinking that you were supposed to actually be mirabea the parkland, which is not true.